knows right now. Jason Murray is the owner of Southwest Adventure Tours. He's been there for 7 years. He's a member of the Utah Tourism Board. He's an avid hiker and backpacker and enjoys mountain biking. And then last but not least, Pam Upton. She's with Bluegrass Tours. She's the director of tours, and in her role, she works with her team to develop and execute content and to expand and implement educational and entertaining programs that not only meet but exceed customer expectations.
Wonderful. And this is hopefully going to be a little bit of interactive dialogue, so think about questions. But I think first we'll have each of you kind of say hello and give a little overview of what experiential travel means to your segment and your business, because it's a little different for all three of them. Whoever would like to start?
I'm ladies first.
I'm Pam Upton. I'm with Bluegrass Tours, and our company started back in the 1960s as one of the original experimental tour programs, visiting horse farm tours, doing horse farm, visiting those, and we have continued to do that over all these years. We do go to the Kentucky Derby and have programs for that. With the explosion of the bourbon industry over the past few years, that's become a big draw for both domestic and international tourists. We can do some really cool things with master distillers and making your own bottle of bourbon, blending some different barrels. So got some really fun things to do with that. And just always looking for different things. Kentucky is a lot of natural beauty, so we have some zip lining opportunities and water sports, so a lot of different activities. That
make sure you guys talk as loud as possible, because the air conditioning, yeah, the back probably can't hear you, so
sure
you project.
Okay. But so we do a lot of things in state to expose tourists to our natural beauty.
Okay. Yes, and I'm Pia with Jaya Tilake with Travalco, and I've just recently joined Travalco, and my experience with experiential travel is more on the MICE corporate side versus the leisure side. And what we have to think about on the corporate groups is that our clients don't choose to go to New York or Miami or wherever they're going. It's the company taking them there. And they might have done those travels a lot of times as a leisure traveler. So we need to be very innovative and think of outside the box and come up with things that they potentially would not think about themselves, that potentially also is not necessarily shown off to the leisure traveler, but we can find those little niches and unique things. And also the fact that they nowadays they really want to do what we do, that live here, and not what the tourist does. And that's my biggest struggle sometimes, because they think that with a group they can do certain things, but as soon as you're a group, you are out of the box a little bit. So we have to figure out ideas on how to do that.
Jason Murray, Southwest Adventure Tours. We focus on small group excursions, mainly, instead of the large motor coach tours. That's our bread and butter. The big thing for us is, obviously, in the southwestern U.S., there's not a lack of things to experience, see, and do. Some of you have been there. It's a fantastic area to go and explore. The big thing that we do, that we try and focus on, is creating experiences and memories, obviously, in going to the national parks, making sure that the clients get areas at prime times for either photography purposes or to make sure that we avoid the crowds, because we know if we come at certain times, we will be with, you know, there'll be larger groups, motor coaches, those type of things. So always making sure, one thing we try and do is adjust our schedule to meet those needs and demands. Our backpacking and hiking things, we always try and choose trails teaching and educating our guests and making them aware and making sure that they experience nature the way it's meant to be without leaving a footprint. So practicing leave no trace principles, that's a really big thing for us, and we feel that that's a way for them to not only truly experience the West the way it's meant to be, but also that they come away with a greater appreciation of how hard we work as an outfitter to make sure that the next person that goes to that same spot will have as good of an experience as the person that just left it. Another thing we do is we incorporate a lot of unique, and we're always looking for something unique and different. And the struggle we have is what used to be unique and different is no longer the norm, or is becoming the norm. So everyone wants to have that, you know, Instagrammable post, that one thing that it's becoming so normal now, you have to, it's becoming harder and harder. So looking up things to do, or looking at things to do, like being able to have somebody cook in a Navajo outdoor oven and create bread and stuff like that, or actually trying their hand at rug weaving, not just seeing a demonstration of it, but being able to actually do the rug weaving themselves. Getting into the backcountry and spending the night in a hogan instead of just seeing the hogan during the day, if they so choose. Those are a few things that we look at. Other things, obviously, like the cooking classes, looking at different ways to bring out culinary things. Being in Utah, even offering them the opportunity of doing handcart treks, where you pull a handcart like the old-fashioned pioneers did when they experienced those things. Like, those are some things, but it is getting, one of the struggles we have is getting more and more, the unique is no longer unique, mm-hmm. just because it's more readily available, so.
Are there any questions so far? Because you guys, this is kind of your chance to ask them anything you want to know. Yes, perfect.
I have a question.
Yes.
So can receptive operators actually make money off these experiential travel? Because, I mean, is there enough discount provided that it makes sense for you guys? I mean, is that actually a problem with it?
From my aspect, absolutely, we make money on them. And for us, I'm assuming that's for you too, since we have to find you new unique experiences and products, the Step to Success program that is done in a lot of states now, but it's super, super important because it's teaching our mm-hmm. suppliers how to work with our market in order for us to get exactly what you're asking, the discounts.
It's hard enough for me, the hotels, to do it. So yeah. I'm just thinking, like, tour operators.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but that's why that program is so important, because it helps us give that unique experience to our clients. Because working with those that don't know how our market works, you can mm-hmm. do it, but it's hell. I'm sorry to say, it's hell.
But isn't your pricing structure different? Don't you charge more for a special experience than a typical leisure travel?
Not on the my side, no. But on the leisure side, no. I wouldn't. No. I don't think so no. either. It's
still going to look up yeah. the price.
It's,
if it's yeah. available
yeah.
online.
Yeah,
a lot of the destinations, and the Bourbon Tours would be a better example. And Pam can talk more about this. So for me, like those. You can, depending on what you want. So like cooking classes down in Tucson, Arizona, because you're doing a foodie tour, or you're doing a culinary thing, or a brew tour in Durango, Colorado, where you're hitting different distilleries, breweries around there. Like those experiences, like you can make money off of it mm-hmm. as a receptive. I'm a receptive, and I have scheduled departures that people buy into, and I do FIT self-drive trips. I make money on all three categories, so it is very possible to do all of that. It takes time for you to, like a lot of destinations, especially the smaller areas, it takes time for you to work with that person and get him to see what you're trying to accomplish, and the other side of it is they have to be willing to go in that direction. If you're trying to bring an experience to, you know, the larger markets that receptives can offer, you have to make sure that that person is willing to make that jump from just doing this as a side gig or something I do after work at night, or something that we do on the side because I have a friend in the tourism office that asked me to do it, to this is an actual like operating business. Sometimes that's, you know, sometimes years in the making, but it can be very profitable for both parties and you can make money off of it.
And I would say also, I think part of what the steps to success and working with operators like them and us, teaching them to price appropriately. You've got the person who does it as a side gig and then all of a sudden starts doing it as a business and is literally selling their tour for exactly as much as they need to make what they think they make money. And then teaching them that realistically, that's not how a business should operate. You need to have some kind of profit so that you can discount eventually, because even when you're selling to the end consumer, you may want to offer a special during the month of February. Right. And if you're only selling, so it ends up profiting them as well if both the parties take the time to educate and explain it to them.
I'm from Colorado Springs, and I started working with one of our outfitters 11 years ago, saying, okay, I need you to offer net rates for this, 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 and this. And he said, well, how much do I need to do? And I said, 30%. And he said, 30%? I said, 30%. Mm-hmm. And anyway, for the first 6 years, he didn't see anybody, but he said, every year he'd say, do I have to do these contracts again? And I'd say, yes, you do. He's now seeing business. He loves the business that he's seeing. And in reality, he's not raised his rates in 6 years either. Mm-hmm. He's just happy with the business that he's gotten, and he's doing okay with that. But I go out to some of the other operators. I went down to a whitewater rafting company. They didn't get it to begin with, but they've got it now, and they're doing very, very well with this market also. So it's just a matter of also choosing your battles, I think, and how much you want to hit your head against that proverbial brick wall. But there are people out there that will do it.
Like you discussed the word experiential. I've been in the industry for quite a few years, and I've contracted attractions and fly drive packages and regular packages and hotels and all over the U.S. And my goal was always for clients to experience the destination. So is the basic, even in articles when you read today, they talk about experiential and all that kind of stuff. So is the only difference you're going from observing to doing? Why? Because we've been doing it for, you know, for the last 20 years, 30 years, you know, for clients like ranches, whether we're having for you, or, you know, different things. So what's the difference today in the word experiential than 15 years ago?
Good question.
If you look at on my the corporate my side, what's different? The difference now versus then is the Europeans, which is my market, have always been well traveled, but they're even more well traveled now. And as I said earlier, they have been here 500 times or amount of times on their leisure. Now the company decides that they got to go here for a conference or an incentive or what it is. So for us, we really need to, if we look at New York, for example, I can't take them on a regular city sightseeing because the whole bus has been in New York already. I cannot give them Times Square and Empire State Building. They're going to look at me and say, okay, that was the last time I booked you. So I really need to push to see what other products we have that they do not think about themselves. They might not be marketed all the way to Europe already, even though we have already gone in the process of teaching them how to work with our market. And also the fact that they really want to, on the corporate my side, we are usually in main cities. It's not necessarily that we are outside in secondary markets. That they want to be in New York as a New Yorker. Before, they wanted to be in New York and experience New York and see all the, you know, Times Square, the lights, all this, that, and whatever. Now they want to go out in the outer boroughs. They want to experience New York. the way I do that live there. They want to go to local restaurants where there should not be any tourists in their mind, hopefully.
Your definition of experiential travel today?
From what I've found over the last several years is people want to be more involved in what they're seeing and doing. We may not be able to get them on the back of a horse grazing on the track, but we can do some other things to get them involved. We can go out to a farm. The owners can take a little bit more time with them explaining basically how they can get into the business if they so chose to do. Have dinner with them. We may even do what we call Thoroughbred 101. We'll start the whole process of the life of a thoroughbred horse and, you know, the birth of it, the breeding, the racing, go to the sales pavilion and try to experience that whole process. And people really do seem to like that, getting all the ins and outs of that.
And so I think what I'm hearing too and what they're saying and what I'm seeing is the clients are looking to, experiential travel now is more focused on doing something authentic for a longer period of time than what you used to, and rather than spend half an hour doing this and half an hour, people really want to see how it is to run a horse farm and spend 8 hours that day doing that rather than just look at the horse farm and pet a horse and keep moving.
Yeah, I think they want more hands-on.
Yeah.
They don't want to like go to a cooking class. They want to cook. They want to do them themselves. Yep. Not somebody cook for them.
Yeah. And authenticity. I think it's if people are faking whatever the thing is and just doing it in a very kitschy way, it's becoming more and more noticeable than it has in the past. They don't want to stay in a Hogan and just, you know, sleep there. They want to really talk to Native Americans and get the experience of what
lifestyle
that means and what that meant to live there and not just take a photo of I overnighted in Hogan.
I think it's also the element of surprise nowadays. That's a big difference, that people want to be surprised. Back then, it was probably more of a checklist. People want to see at the Empire State Building because their mom or cousin, somebody had been there, took a picture, and back then you also had the photo albums. Everybody takes out their photo album. Nowadays, everybody posts it on Instagram, which means your 10 other friends might have been in New York City last week. They saw the same thing, so you want to experience something different, something behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A question for you. So as an operator, so you want to provide this customization and choice, right? But then you have to go to a supplier and say, I want to do something unique for this, maybe not on the my side, but on the leisure side. I want to do something unique and nobody's done this for this passenger. But now the next passenger don't want to do the same thing. So now you're going to ask me for 30% off for one sale. And then you got to go to another supplier and ask them for another net rate for, you know, for small volumes is what I mean. Are you running into that? Did that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does make sense. And unfortunately in our state, we've gone through the steps of success, so we're trying to get people involved with that to understand that concept, that if you're willing to have a rate for this type of program, that your volume is going to go up. So we're still working on that. We have a couple of partners that have bought into that, and they're willing to be creative and say, okay, well, let's try this. So we're working on that. It's a process for us.
And I would also throw in, I think that you're still going to have the clients that want to do the general thing. So
if you can make
a partnership with somebody where you're selling three of their tours that are consistently the same, but know that they do offer something special for those one-off clients that they can, or the ones that really want something different, or the mice or whatever. So it's that working with them on all the different levels rather than just one level anymore.
So,
and we had a question, sorry.
In answer to yours, just for examples for me. So like Lake Powell, Aramark, Lake Powell, we do their normal, you know, stay that you can do their scenic tours, but we've gotten a good relationship with them where they'll do a custom trip. We can do custom houseboating trips with mm-hmm. them. Or we work with the Hidden Canyon Kayaks, where we can sell people on their normal kayaking trips and excursions, but they can also, they customize for us here, and they'll still give us our discounted rate, mm-hmm. Just as a couple examples for that. So a lot of it comes down, a lot of it depends also on the people you work with and the their willingness to look at that. Are they stuck on, do they have to just do their bread and butter stuff? For us, the thing that we run into when people want to experience something different and unique is also, are people permitted to do that? Because 90% of everywhere we go is either a national park, BLM, or Forest Service. If the people aren't permitted to be able to do those activities or to offer something other than this, we can't do it, like, at all.
It's a really good point, Jason.
So, and that's something for the Western U.S. that you do have to be aware of,
sure.
That a lot of it comes down to, will the federal government allow us to even do certain types of activities,
right.
Where they may see an individual do something on Instagram or whatever, and they come to us and ask, well, can you guys do that?
Maybe.
No. Mm-hmm. Like, it's
yeah.
somebody that got, I think there was somebody that did this wedding, and they did this huge spider web canvas in Canyonlands, outside of Canyonlands National Park, and they got married standing over this, and that was a one-off special permit thing that took months to get into place.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, it just depends.
We had a question.
Also, real quick on Jason. You also have a problem where people see something as an individual, and that maybe an operator can do this for up to 5 people, but then a group comes along and wants to do it. And
yeah.
It can be very difficult
yes.
to get a permit for 10 or more people.
Yeah.
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 Same thing with the permitting. Your group size, a lot of BLM land, it's 12 people or less in these destinations, whereas the national parks, if you have a group, you're only allowed to be here, 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 and here. Those are some other things that we have to be cognizant of when it comes to that.
Thank you. I'm Greg Marshall with Rochester and Wine Waters and Wonders of New York State. This experiential travel and tourism talk, the one thing that keeps popping up, at least for us when we're training agricultural destinations or food destinations, is liability insurance. And the new insurance companies don't like the word new and different. They don't like that.
Yeah.
And so have you or anyone run into the issue of how to maybe deal with that relative to, okay, we're going to have visitors cook over open flames, or we're going to have people traipsing through an orchard for the first time ever, or petting a horse from the wrong side? Any issues?
I usually stay around the
table. Yeah, don't go to the back of the horse.
Front bites, back
That's
kicks.
True. That's true.
We do have a release that they
yep.
sign going to the farms. And then also we have a state law, and we post those and make the guest aware that if you go on to one of these agricultural establishments, that you're taking the risk into your own hands. So, you know, and that's maybe something that you need to check to see what your state law is.
Right.
Well, it's usually the suppliers, usually the farmer or the restaurateur that's not willing to take the risk because they got to check with their insurance company and somebody said a one-off and like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered if you're getting resistance from suppliers to not provide the product because they're not.
If you look on my side, we do a lot of things that where we, as my company, has to provide the insurance
right.
mm-hmm. instead of the supplier to cover for our clients.
Mm.
And of course, that always comes with a cost. And the question is whether the client wants to take that cost or not.
Yeah. So just an
yeah.
add-on liability.
Yeah.
So if for any reason the supplier cannot do it, we can use our insurance, but of course with the cost ending up on the client. And
yeah.
as long as you explain it properly to your client and the venue or the activity that you're doing, they think it's well worth it, they have no issues.
Thank you.
Yes.
A couple of things. One of the things that you guys are talking about was larger groups versus smaller groups, and when you have something that you can't do, Casey's from Minneapolis. I'm from Bloomington, Minnesota. We've done some as corporately, like Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, Mall of America, we've done a bunch of experiential. And what we've found is sometimes with the larger groups, we'll take things that only smaller, we'll only take smaller groups, but then we'll do three of those and we'll split that group into mm-hmm. three and keep rotating mm-hmm. them around. So that for corporate yeah. groups or mice groups, that works well. We have a Von Foss at Mall of America, so it's these amazing oils and liqueurs and spices, and so she does cooking classes. The store itself is experiential because you can taste everything, but then she takes that to another level and she's created like a Mediterranean cooking class. And she's, but what I was going to say is she's got this on her website, she's got these different things, but we can go to her and say, we're going to bring in this group, we want to do this, but we need to tweak this just so, and she will do that for us because she's mm-hmm. got this already, she's got this machine going and she's got everything laid out, so she can tweak it and she can do it to what we need and then, you know, and still be able to charge for it. But my question is, do you guys have, for some of our, I mean, for her corporately, they have the engine behind it to be able to do those FIT, mm-hmm. Those one-off people who want to join a class, they can do that. But what about smaller, have you found any kind of an app or any kind of a service that is workable for smaller, someone who's a smaller business person who can take those one-offs and put them together as one group? Do you know what I'm saying? Like some of them, it's not profitable unless they have a group of people doing that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out how do we do that and then like piecemeal like these different people and say, this is an offering you can sign up for.
So, in that regard, third-party wholesalers are going to be the best option for that. It's going to be, so Viator, which is now TripAdvisor, Get Your Guide, Tour Radar, Express, I'm trying to think of the other ones that are international. So those third-party wholesalers, Google is actually getting into that in a big way now. So the Google Business, and then they can actually list certain products. So offering those third-party wholesalers, and once again, that opens up the whole door of, you know, having your rate correct, because those wholesalers or resellers of travel in that way are going to want money, mm-hmm. and it's they're going to want a percentage right off the top.
Right.
And they also got to be prepared because some of them, like it's 30 days to pay, so their event's going to happen, but they won't get the money from them until down the road. So, but that's going to be the easiest way for
that. We did a program with Joe Benito who came in and educated. I think that's the biggest thing is just educating all of these who are offering these kind of things, you know, like to make sure that they do have the correct rates that they do. Because a lot of them are like, oh, I don't know, I don't feel like I can charge more than, and I'm like, no, you can charge more than that. You need to charge this much so that you can mm-hmm. discount this much so that you can, you know, mm-hmm. so I think that whole process. And we also did a process where we tested out whatever they had done. We went through, you know, corporately we went through and we said we want to experience this before we put our stamp of approval on anything. We want to make sure that it's right mm-hmm. When they're newer like that, you know, like, so I think that was key. So just that combination of education and also going back and tweaking and saying, we need to refine this, you need to do this better. Some of them hired people who actually did the presentation because the person who's the owner is not good at presenting. And we're like, mm-hmm. You need to do this. You need to have someone else come in. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be comfortable doing this. So, I mean, I think all of those things were really helpful. Yeah.
And another, and I forgot to mention this, but also the Groupons and those type of things mm-hmm. are great ways to fill last minute things. A lot of the studies are finding that these day or half hour, 2 hour experiences, people are booking them. I think the latest report from TripAdvisor was people are booking those type of experiences 12 hours before mm-hmm. the event is going to happen. So it makes it a little difficult for companies that are doing cooking classes and stuff like that, because you never know what you're going to have up until possibly
the night before
or the morning of, even.
Yeah.
So, but that's another thing of just when setting stuff up with them and teaching them, it's just recognizing that a company that, like, if somebody plans a self-drive trip or something like that into an area, they'll get into an area, they have this much free time, they don't even think about that free time until the morning of.
Right.
And then they're searching for what can I do, and then they'll book something. So it's makes it a little tough in that regard.
I have a question in regards to marketing, and for the long setup, it might be a little bit long. So I'm from Fort Lauderdale, and we represent Broward County. And we, of course, want to highlight some of these unknown, undiscovered experiences. Dan's question is still rolling around in my head. But, you know, they're unique and different, or not unexpected, at least for what people know. But our people come to us for the beach and for shopping, right? Mm-hmm. For cruising. So those are the assets. People can say whatever, oh, we want unique experience, and then they go to the beach, you know, right, with the rest of everybody. So I can imagine in New York, you know, yeah, you want to do something different, but they're going to go, you know, Top of the Rock or Empire State Building or something like that.
No, actually not anymore. But
here's my question. In terms of marketing, do you still lead with, I mean, you have to lead with your big sellers, right? I mean, everybody wants to do the unique experiences, whatever, but we have to lead with, I don't know, how do you approach it? Do you do your best sellers? Is that the pictures you send to your clients to put on brochures? See what I'm asking?
I see what you're asking, and for us, we're probably a little different because we don't have an attraction. So I can tweak my horse or my bourbon experiences to customize them for someone.
But you're answering my question, because then Kentucky is horses and bourbon. You said there's plenty of natural wonders in the state, but you lead with horses and bourbon, which is what's in my head about Kentucky.
That's correct. And then sometimes, you know, if they've got another interest, then we'll piggyback it and try to find something that is a compatible product.
That's a layer on top of your...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've... So,
I mean, I don't market the mice groups in that sense, because
they're
they're unique out of that aspect. So what I have to do in order is I need to do a lot of research on the group, mm-hmm, in the sense of what's the demographic, how many has been here before, are we mostly men, are we mostly women, because it's up to me to really tell them. The leisure traveler usually knows, have an idea what they want and seek that. Well, I actually have to give them, I have to tell the corporate what they are going to do. And depending on the demographics, that's how I market it to that specific group.
For me, marketing, it's a yes and no. So if you come to my homepage of my website, obviously I'm highlighting the known areas of the southwestern U.S., but when we do targeted e-blasts or targeted Google ads or Facebook, things like that, we are focusing on those unique things. Mm-hmm. And it will resonate with some people, and some of them will fall completely flat. And I have this cultural trip that we do out in the northwestern New Mexico to the Pueblos and stuff like that. It is a historical cultural tour. And for the last 4 years, it is like not really gotten very well received. Haven't got a lot of bookings from it, but I keep marketing it. We tweak the images, but they're all less known images.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, we've started seeing fruit. It's taken, I think, 5 years for us. And this is something where we have guaranteed the departure to run, even though there's only 2 to 4 people on it, just because we want the reviews, we want the feedback, and we keep running it. And then at the end of the day, you know, this year we've had some really good results sales wise onto it. So it just, you do need to market those unique things. You do need to showcase the lesser known areas in your destination, because some people will see that, they'll grasp onto it, and it may take some time, but mm-hmm. it will in the end, like, it can work out.
And in a side note, I think that that's part of what this industry can do as sure. versus other is if I'm creating an itinerary, I can sneak in things that they wouldn't really, sure. if they're going to Arizona and Utah, they want to see the Grand Canyon and Zion, sure. right? But sure. if you can sneak in other stuff or stay longer in other places, they may be drawn into one thing, but then you're helping expand. But we had a question over here. I will get to you guys in a second. Yep, she's been waiting.
So my name is Luisa Mendoza. I am with Global Tourism Sports and Entertainment. So I'm going to leave this more on the sports aspect of things. Seeing that in 2018, 24% of international travelers wanted to come to the U.S. To experience sport because it's such an authentic experience of what the U.S. is. To see that number jump to 38% last mm-hmm. year in 2019, it's such a great testament of the opportunity that sports is experiential. There's so many things you can do. If you take your group, your MICE group, we actually did a great thing with the Brooklyn Nets and the MICE group that was really like authentic and different, and the people just walked away like this was remarkable, right? My question is, what are you guys hearing from your clients? What advice would you have, and even up to like everybody that's here, how can we position sports, and how can I help facilitate to make that experience of sports, knowing that it's something that it's so desired already, but how can we elevate it to the next level and facilitate the process?
I mean, you and I, you know my answer. No, but the way you do it with the MICE groups, the custom experience, it's all mm-hmm. about the custom experience. It's all about being courtside if they can, or meeting prior, or having something unique that you for sure cannot buy into as a leisure traveler. Because, and maybe not so much certain, depending on what market it is, but the market that I know the best, the Scandinavian market, if we can have a meet and greet with one of the Swedish players in NHL, because right. hockey is, you know,
right.
several things like that, that you cannot do as a leisure traveler. That is, and also these little customized things that we can, like the cocktail receptions, pregame, or things like that.
I think one thing is being truthful, though, to the client. We have people coming in to go to the Kentucky Derby, and there is a wide variety of experiences with a wide variety of cost involved mm-hmm. with that. So, we try to be very forthcoming. If you, at this level, you're here, this is what your experience is gonna be. We can move you up, but you're gonna have to open your purse up. Yeah, so I mean, we can take you all the way to the top, but you better have a lot of zeros
right.
available.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I think you've got to be very forthcoming in what experience they're buying so that they're not disappointed mm-hmm. after the fact, so because you do want to make sure that they're happy with the end product, so that would be my advice.
For the sports travel and the people that I deal with on my side of things, I'm finding that they love the combination. So they love a spring training experience down in Phoenix coupled with a cultural experience down mm-hmm. to Tucson, or a historical experience to Tombstone and Bisbee, or going up to Sedona in the Grand Canyon. That's what I'm seeing on that side of things, where they want to do this, but they want to do this too. And then offering something unique and different. Like, there's one company I work with where they do an actual passport, where just like you go to different countries, you get your passport stamped. You can go to the different ballparks, and there's some people that are like, I want to hit every ballpark in America. Mm-hmm. And the one company that I work with, that supplies my sports side of things, they actually have a passport that you can go in every ballpark you go to gets a stamp. Mm-hmm. and that's something that is a big experience for them. And they hold on to that, and it's something that they endure. And this is for baseball, but that's a big, so those are the two things that I see, just looking to add something a little unique and different. And then obviously what they've said with adding that, the extra things that make a difference. So.
Thank you.
And
that's
when
great.
Their passport is full, they get a trip to the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah.
So there is a payoff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love it.
That's a great idea. So I'm Jennifer Ackerson with Avon Marketing Group, and I teach the Steps to Success program for IITA. These are all really great questions, and so many of them come up in our trainings and our tourism program. So if you want to learn more about that, we can do that. But just to answer Gabe's questions really, really quick, the rule of thumb with the pricing for the tiered pricing is, you know, 10 to 30%. But if you have a regularly scheduled program that other buyers are going to sell, then it has to be tiered. And a lot of times with the MICE groups, with PIA, it's something very exclusive and you're creating it brand new, then sometimes you just give your price and they'll add on to it because it's a one-of-a-kind custom. So that's really where you draw the line. If you're selling this to other buyers, you have to have your tiered pricing, right? And then the question about the new experiences versus the standard, Tourism Ready, which is how Steps to Success started, what it has done is it's created 175 companies in New York City that are very different, like Roberts, who's gonna ask the next question, who has jet skiing that you can go to Statue of Liberty and do this before exhilarating experience before you leave New York City. And this is something that we're promoting now to tour operators and going crazy in all these different countries with new ideas for their clients because of these great experiences. So it's like kind of like you customize it for who we're working with and what country. And he wound up doing really good and is doing well with DMCs because that's a unique experience and they're willing to sell and spend the money on. So Robert, no pressure. He didn't even know I was behind you.
No.
Sorry.
Jen helped me so much. I'm an experiential enthusiast, and I got into having an experiential business by accident. Actually, it wasn't by accident, it was by design, but not for the purpose of having a business. It was the purpose of marketing. So I have a restaurant, and my restaurant's on the water, and I wanted to bring more people. And I thought, wow, if I could do something that would gravitate and attract people to my business, then they'd stay and have some lunch or dinner. So I decided I love jet skiing. I'm gonna put some jet skis in, see if people would want a jet ski and then have a bite to eat. And it turned out, and by the way, I started that with a Groupon and actually TravelZoo first, but I don't think they're in existence anymore.
Yeah,
they are. Okay. So I started with a TravelZoo plan, and I think in a week or two, they sold like 1,500 units. And I had two jet skis, by the way. And I was like, wow, this marketing stuff is really working out great. I just don't know how I'm going to handle everybody, but the marketing stuff was good. So I ended up buying some more jet skis. And after the first season, when I started my second season, I realized that all that marketing was very good, and it did bring business into my restaurant, but I wasn't making any money, and I was shuffling a lot of liability around. Mm-hmm. So I started to slow down, and eventually I stopped all the discounting activities. Now, there are a couple of other jet ski businesses in the New York City area, not too many. Some of them do use the deeply discounted programs. I will never use them again for my jet ski business. You do not, in that kind of business, with the liabilities and the cost of running business, you cannot possibly make money doing this. I own my own property. I don't have to pay rent, and I can't make money with a deep discount. So I can't imagine somebody's got to add the rent on top of that. So at that point, I started to really focus on better business. And my sales in total sales volume actually went down a little bit, but my profit went up. And that was a very important thing for me to understand. About that time, that's when I met Jen. So I went from figuring out how to build a base for myself, just like how an individual business builds a base in a local area, to how to attract and become part of a bigger community, and that's this community, the tourism community. And I've had really great success. It doesn't give me the business, the day-to-day business, which I would love. I would love to have so much business just from this industry that I don't even need to advertise. I would like to just do everything on either a DMC or an FIT kind of program, or and maybe even for some of the smaller convention or some of the splinters of interest of a convention, handle some of that myself. But that would be a great goal of mine, and one of the reasons that I'm attracted to this. So I guess I don't really have a question, but more of, I'm not the only kind of company like this. And when you're asking for experiential kinds of activities, which I provide, and I know how much effort it is to provide an experience. And Jason, you had a great point about running dry on an idea, like, oh, everybody's doing it now. How can you call it unique or experiential? Because now everybody can just go jet ski or whatever the activity is. But I think that even if you have so many people coming through and it seems like your idea is dry, it's really not. But maybe I'm just looking at it through a New Yorker's eyes because we have so much influx of people. But there are always people that haven't had your experience yet. And I think that if you keep a certain amount of freshness with your product, and I do keep a certain amount of activities that are scheduled activities that you could go online and buy 12 hours in advance, or I would much prefer a week in advance, better yet, a year in advance. If I can get my calendar all the way booked and I don't have to even keep any supply open, that would be very fantastic. So I guess my overall question is, what can I do to get the tour operators and the people who are selling the experience products, what can I get you guys to do to get interested in me? Because I want to be right for you guys.
I'll take that one.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So big thing for me and is obviously if we're in your area, offering to be able to take people out and have them experience your product. So the way I do it, because obviously I also have relationships with other operators, and for me it's more, I have a lot of travel agents that sell my product, and we offer them, we have a structure where you can come out, you can take any trip we offer, we'll do it at 50% of whatever the published price is. And then once you come back and you book your first group or individual onto our product, we give you that 50% back as a refund. Nice. So you now have experienced our product for free, but we're getting something out of this also. So that's how.
So you give them the trip at 50% off in advance, but then if they book, you give them the rest?
Yes. As a credit onto that booking.
As a credit onto the
booking. So that they basically got the trip for free in the end, but they have skin in the game up front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That way, as an operator, you're not out 100% of the cost of your business. But then on the flip side, you get them wanting to sell your product, because if they really liked it, they know they can get their money back on there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do to try and encourage people to, like, let's really come and try it. You could go broke trying to give people free experiences the end of the day. So for me, that's how I manage that and get them to be able to experience, but with, you know, making it more affordable. Because a lot of times they're in your area because of a family trip,
right,
or they're tagging it on at the end of a conference or whatever like that. So it usually works out.
That's good. Yeah. And you started by doing the step to success, so you learn a little bit on how we work.
The other, and I forgot, the other thing is work with your local DMO. I know New York City has probably a lot of fam trips that happen, but work with your local DMO and get your destination or your company to be included with the fam trips they're highlighting, mm-hmm, or they're bringing people in. That would be another way to do it. For for me, one way I do that is we provide transportation to the state for fam tours that they do, and that way we get in front of operators or media or other ways, and that to me, I give them a really good rate, and the rest of the expense I write off as marketing expenses, but it gets you in front of people you wouldn't see otherwise. That's another way to do it.
Any other questions? So on a different note, how do you guys see working technology in, but also the experiential travel kind of thing? I think this might have been Jason's question, so hopefully he has an answer for that. But running that fine line of the unique and different and whatever with all the technologies going on and that kind of thing.
On my end, the mice, you cannot really do too much technology except for our travelers. We can provide apps for certain excursions and things like that. But since an ad hoc mice group, it's so much, it's a manual labor. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it is manual labor. Jason, because you need to put different programs for every group. So it's not something you can just put in your computer and pull out.
Thank heavens.
A lot of work.
Yeah. For me, it is, and there's a million different booking engines and booking systems, but having your system automated, if you want to get more regular business where online, having a booking engine that is functional and easy to use is very important. So, and remember that the less information you have to require a customer to put in to get the initial booking, the easier it is and the more desirable it will be for them to actually sign up. And then once you got them hooked, then ask for all the other stuff. So keep it simple. There's a million different companies. I saw Flywire here. There's ResD, ResMark. I'm going to forget it. Fair Harbor, Peak. TripAdvisor just came out with their own system. And a lot of these actually have ways to integrate your TripAdvisor and get your guide and other guides where they'll actually like automatically take in and out of your inventory. Mm-hmm. So finding those type of systems to utilize instead of, you know, just I use QuickBooks or I use a CRM software that has the ability to take payments, like, and there's some simple things like that, but you got to look and see how to dynamically improve your abilities and how to make your time efficient, because the more you grow, the busier you're going to get and the less time you're going to have to manage something that used to be easy, but it's more manual. And then also you realize that like some companies like a ResD or a Peak or a Flywire or Fair Harbor, they'll actually allow your product to be easily cross-sold by concierges and other companies because they have this back-end support network that works good. Sorry, that was very long-winded.
Dan, question, comment over there?
Yeah, well, on the tech, I work for Matter Teleconference. We have a lot of technology available to book our products through API connections, through online portals. Those have to be daily scheduled tours that you plan out 6 months, 8 months, 9 months in advance, which really takes away from something unique and different. There's also quite a bit of fees internally to those bookings, and not everyone's system works. We have our own custom-built API system that is connected to multiple companies. I still get faxes from companies.
Faxes?
Oh, yeah.
6 people for tomorrow. And works in our office is like, I don't know what that machine is making this noise for. And I think that's the hard part right now on the activity side, as we are in multiple areas of the travel industry, travel agents, direct, online direct, OTAs, receptives, tour operators, international, I mean, we do it all. Tier that pricing the best you can. But we're seeing there's such a diverse section of the nativity business, it's really hard for the operators to connect to one technology or any that makes sense for the entire activity industry. Where you have, you run jet skis, you know, to where we have our whole internal process that monitors the priorities of the helicopters with like maintenance to it. So it's really hard. I know a guy that he does walking tours in Austin, and he's like, I take the reservation on a notepad still. So when you, as a company, commit to go only one, there's still going to be so many companies you're not going to work with. And I think on the activity side, for you have to still do kind of all of it, which we thought was going to really shorten up. We were going to be able to move people around. It's actually more labor. Now we have an API team, we have a revenue management team, and we have our reservations team.
Max team.
You flew it in fast.
We actually added about 25% more.
There you go.
It is.
Pluses and minuses.
Yeah. That's a good point. I should bring that up. Because there's cost. And sometimes it's a lot.
And kind of that similar thing. Are there trends that you guys are seeing that you think will change in the future? I'm just thinking one of the things that I've seen a lot, especially now in relation to that too, is free tours where they're going, the free walking tours where they go and they're just expecting you to tip at the end. So they're not getting any of, I did it when I was in Edinburgh, the Harry Potter tour, and they had 75 people hanging out waiting, and they had their three guides, and those guides probably made more money doing it that
tour.
Way with their free tour, because right. everybody was like, oh, you were awesome, here's $20.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's kind of a thing that you're seeing in the experience. Are there other similar kinds of things, or the future of where it's heading, or things that you're seeing coming up?
Oh, it's stuff like the tours by locals.
Yeah.
Which all tours by locals is just another wholesaler that's putting a different label on it. Like
it's good marketing.
Yes. Yeah. I see you raising your hand. You want to say something.
I do, because there's a part of this of someone that, I mean, we know a lot about insurance and liability. And people getting into the game now on the activity side, such as like Airbnb, we're not even allowed to put our product out there because it's not a unique service. I'm like, well, kind of is. And also, we require all these insurance things to protect your companies, the travelers, pretty much everyone involved. We're seeing a lot of come have dinner with your group in Cheryl's house.
Yeah.
Well, where's who regulates that?
Yeah. Which Cheryl, who is Cheryl, and am I going to get food for?
What is Cheryl?
And what happens if I do?
Airbnb is
an interesting trend, because it is, they don't really,
they're not regulating
any of that.
Wow.
And they're just assuming that,
like, they're assuming that they're not all party houses.
Exactly. They're
same
assuming
time.
That the people are doing the correct things.
So my question is, as operators, how important is the research that you do in the companies that you look into as far as operating services, like a helicopter or jet skis? And there's a price associated with that, you know, of how do you relay that message to your customers of, I've picked this experience. There's others that are cheaper, but.
We do that all the time. And we explain to them why we choose you versus somebody else. Because we have better experience with you. You do the business better. We know you have the right equipment. You do your safety inspections the way you're supposed to. You have your insurance. Of course, we relay that, especially if it's a big price difference. We tell them. And we tell them we'll happily book the cheaper one, but then it's on you.
Exactly.
We do not take responsibility for that.
Another thing that we always look out for is additionally insured. So any operator that we work with on a regular basis where we're doing a lot of stuff with them, we will go out and ask for an additionally insured, being like, we will list them on ours general liability policy. We ask the same for them coming back to us. And that could be very telling right then and there.
Yeah.
If they balk at it, or they, like, that's going to tell you right there. And you got to be aware of who has that type of insurance, and what type of insurance it is. That's a big thing. Because
we do that also.
Yeah.
We don't use any transportation company without having a COI from them.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You would.
Yeah. I think we have time for one more question. And
I was just going to add on to that. I guess actually, we sell some products to tour operators, but we're all, you know, our majority of our business being a tour operator. I would say, to me, that the customer that's looking for the Airbnb experience, because I deal with this on groups too, in the sense that customers that don't care about the level of service on the student side that we provide, they're not my customer. Like, it's not, whoa. They're just not my customer. I would hate to say this, I really don't care. Like, if you don't value that, if you don't value the coverage of insurance that you have and the things that I do, I really don't have time to talk to you. Because there are, I need to spend my time looking for customers that value what you do. And I guess I would say, from a supplier standpoint, for me as an operator, that's where I think that suppliers who have that same mindset can help us with marketing, the more information I have and things like that, mm-hmm. you know, and also help me understand who your core customer is, so that when I'm going after my customer, I'm reaching out to the right people so that it's a great marriage right. with the two of us. Because I don't want to waste my time with the people looking for the Airbnb experience, because they're going to be sadly disappointed with everything I'm doing anyway.
Right.
They're not my customer. Mm-hmm.
I think that might be, unless there is still a question, we are at our time. So hopefully you guys learned something. And of course, all of them are here to answer any personal questions or personal questions. That's not what I meant. Any directed questions.
You're a liability.
I know. Yeah, I am. Sorry.
Great session, you guys.
Yeah.
Great session. Thank you.
Thank you.